We've got the top five films. We've also got the new releases coming up. We've got the premiere, and this is a big one. And there's been a bit of controversy surrounding this film, William. We'll talk about that a little bit later on the show. And the classic. Now, without giving away the classic film of the week, what can you say about it that might give a little bit of a tease for our listeners?
Let's just say it rhymes with Batman.
It rhymes with Batman.
Yeah.
Okay.
Like, almost directly.
Okay, we'll go with that. So that's our classic film of the week. And then we move in towards the end of the show to the little picture. And really, you can't get away without talking about this TV series. It is, of course, Game of Thrones. You can't escape it.
And nor should you, because it's the best thing on TV right now.
Mm-hmm. So you've been keeping up to date. You've been watching it every single week. What night does it actually go out on air?
It goes out actually very early Monday morning here, because it's airing at the same time everywhere else in the world. Sunday night in the US, but then it's quickly online after that and on TVs everywhere. So you can find it through many different places, and everyone is. This is the most popular show in the world.
Okay, so we'll be talking about Game of Thrones. This is The Big Picture on Dubai i103.8.
The Big Picture.
All right, we'll start the show with the top five films this week. These are the five films that are doing very well at the UAE box office. And starting at number five, we've got Dum Laga Ke Hashi, which is a 2015 Hindi romantic comedy, and that is directed by Sharat Katiria. Also at number four, we've got Barely Legal, which is an action comedy film directed by Kyle Newman and starring Hailee Steinfeld. Number three is Tracers, which is an American action drama film, and that stars Taylor Lautner. Number two, no changes here. I think this was number two last week as well. Paul Blart, Mall Cop 2, which stars Kevin James. And at number one, again, no changes for this week. Possibly there will be no changes ever until we get into 2020. I don't know. Number one this week, this is the number one film at the UAE box office, Fast and Furious 7. William, will this film ever go away? I don't know.
I think when people were looking at this year, they were looking at, oh, this is going to be, you know, Avengers versus Star Wars. Like, these are the films of this year. But no, this is Fast and the Furious this time. This is going to be the biggest movie of the year. This is one of the biggest franchises and the most important. It's definitely the most important franchise in the world. Forget Star Wars, forget Batman. This is more relevant to most people everywhere. And just the popularity has just reached an entire point, and the critical mass has reached an entire point that this is the time for Fast and the Furious. We'll see if 8 and 9 can hold on just as well, which have been officially announced, and these are going to be happening. But 7 is a peak, and people are embracing it.
I heard a lovely interview with Vin Diesel, and he was being very honest, very open about his feelings. Obviously, it is the last film that Paul Walker was in before he tragically passed away. And he was saying, you know, usually we end these films, the Fast and Furious films, with a kind of a cliffhanger, so you know that there's another one coming. But for this one, because it had such a special place in our hearts, we didn't want to end it that way. Because everyone was like, oh, is there going to be another one? Is it going to be 8? He's like, look, you're just going to have to wait and see. We know, of course, there's going to be an 8 and a 9 and a 10 and whatever. But he said we ended this one on an ambiguous note because we had to. This stands by itself.
Yeah, and he said, in terms of Paul Walker and losing him, that 7 was for Paul and 8 was from Paul. Because it was Paul first that said, we'll be back for 8. We're really excited about doing 8. So they felt, because of his spirit, they had to carry that on. But to point it out about him being so open in these interviews, that's another thing, I think, that has brought this and made it accessible for people. Because if you watch those interviews with Vin Diesel, of course, all anyone's thinking about is Paul Walker.
Of course.
And he completely engages and he opens up. And that allows people to feel close to this series and feel close to these people and feel close to these characters when they watch the film. When you watch the press interviews for Avengers, for example, Robert Downey Jr., the second Robert Downey Jr. sits down, you wonder about Robert Downey Jr., the man. And anyone sitting down, like, there was this interview that he did in the UK where they were trying to talk to him about his troubled past and his relationship with his father, and he got it from the interview and just was very dismissive, thinking that he's too big for this. And I think that actually alienates people from the star and vicariously through the movie, because just the ability that Vin Diesel has to connect with people, and Robert Downey Jr. just rejects that.
But if you're a child, You just send a kid to interview Robert Downey Jr. because he's done beautiful interviews with 6, 7, 8-year-olds. You know, and he did one, I think it was last week, and again to promote the new Avengers film. And I think there's a certain kindness there that he has for children that maybe he doesn't have for the media so much.
Yeah, he's pretty skeptical, I think, of anyone's intentions.
Yeah.
And you'll notice in other interviews, he did an interview with Grantland recently, and they started talking about just other filmmakers and, you know, the films that they loved and the bands that they loved. Mm-hmm. And just because they approached it from that perspective, he started talking about, you know, his plans with his father and what they were doing for dinner the next day.
You have to be clever.
So you have to not necessarily be clever. You have to be earnest, and you have to be coming from the right place.
Mm-hmm.
So being clever is a lot of times the wrong way to approach it. You should just be true.
Mm-hmm. Don't be sassy. I think that's the lesson that many journalists have learnt with Robert Downey Jr. But anyway, that's for another story. We'll be talking about the Avengers a little bit later on in the show. But let's get into the new releases for this week. There's a lot of new films that have come out. However, as you said last week, William, we're kind of moving into a time of the year where not so much is coming out.
Well, it's not that not so much is coming out. It's that when one comes out, that is the movie that everyone must see. We have gotten to the point of the blockbuster and the destination and appointment viewing for these sorts of films. So everyone has to go see Fast and Furious. We all have to go see Avengers. We're all going to have to go see Star Wars.
Mm-hmm.
And there's no choice in the matter. So any other film is just sad to be in its way.
Mm-hmm. But let's talk about one new release for this week. It's Samba. Now, this came out during the Dubai International Film Festival in December 2014. It's now been given a general release here in the UAE, which is fantastic. It's a French film, and it really is fantastic. It's a beautiful, moving story. It's well edited, and it's beautifully shot as well. I really recommend people go see it.
Yeah, I think first and foremost, just to tell people to go see this, you just speak of the filmmaker's last work, which was The Untouchables from 2012, which was such a crowd pleaser.
Mm-hmm.
People adored that film and really, really connected with it. And they connected with its star, Omar Sy, who's back here starring as Samba, like the dance, as he explains in the film. This migrant worker from Africa who's trying to make it in France and barely making it. Just, you know, struggling just to stay abreast in his employment and on the right side of the law and just on the right side of relationships with people. He's just really having a trouble fitting in. And when you're seeing, it's super relevant right now, because when you're seeing things in the media like boats that are capsizing and all these different things, the second people have a hard time really humanizing those sorts of people, because they view them as, you know, invaders and outsiders who are just trying to take over Europe and this sort of thing. They view it almost like it's nefarious. But I think a lot of time, whenever something like this happens, I just think back to Samba. I think back to this character and how much I cared about him while watching this movie and how much I connected with him. And I think, what if he was one of the people on this boat? And it breaks my heart to think that. So I think this does a great job of humanizing all these migrant workers that are coming in from Africa to Europe and the troubles that they have. And it's a really beautiful, crowd-pleasing film, and I think it's a film you could take your family to.
Mm-hmm.
So if you don't want to go see the hustle and bustle of Avengers, by all means, go see Samba.
Okay, that's a new release for this week. And it comes out to the UAE cinemas if you fancy catching a film this weekend. We will continue talking about films after the break here on Dubai i103.8. We have our premiere, which is The Avengers. Very much looking forward to hearing William's review of that. Also, our classic film of the week. Yes, it rhymes with Batman. Great hint there, William. From 1989, which is an American superhero film. Three guesses on what that is. And then we move into the little picture towards the end of the show, and that is Game of Thrones. It's all coming up here on Dubai i103.8.
The Big Picture.
This is The Big Picture on Dubai i103.8 with me, Zara Sor. Jason Lumber is away. He's not feeling very well, but he'll be back on Sunday. And our film critic, William Mullally. And we're talking about our premiere film of the week right now here on Dubai i103.8. This one we've been waiting for a very, very long time. I know that this is going to do, I mean, it's like 110% definitely going to be in the top five for next week. It is The Avengers Age of Ultron.
Yeah, this will be one of the biggest movies
for
of the year.
For sure.
The first one, though, people didn't expect it to be as popular as it was. Mm. I mean, that was a film that people thought, okay, yeah, people are going to want to see these teams together. But it became one of the biggest movies of all time.
Sure.
And just insane box office, insane fan response. And it just catapulted the Marvel Universe to a different level.
Mm-hmm.
In people's minds, in people's hearts, and in people's wallets completely. And this film has, it's a different point. All of a sudden the expectations are there. All of a sudden people are looking at this in a bit of a different way.
Mm.
And I think that's going to cause a different reaction. I don't know if it's going to do just as well as the first one did.
But why is that? I know that you've got mixed feelings about this film, but why is that? Is it just because the storyline or the characters? What's been going on with this film?
Yeah, for one, the first one was something that people had never seen before.
Mm-hmm.
And it was just pure fan service. We'd always had in our imaginations, what if they did a movie where we had, you know, Captain America and Iron Man and all these cool characters, and they're all together and they're fighting aliens and all this stuff. And they finally mm-hmm. just delivered it to us. And it was Joss Whedon, who's the most, I guess, fanboyish creator they could have possibly put in the director's chair and the writer's chair to do that.
Just remind us about Joss Whedon and why he really was the director for this film.
Joss started off as a treatment writer and scriptwriter for TV, and he did little things like Speed and Toy Story, just, you know, small movies like that, small indie things.
Did he do Buffy?
Yeah, before moving into the film Buffy, he did that before he was doing these things. Wasn't so much of a success, but once he did the television show Buffy, then Joss mm-hmm. Whedon started becoming a household name. And that was one of the most important shows, one of the best shows of the last 20 years, certainly. He did Angel, he did the show Firefly, which fans know is one of the greatest things that's ever existed, and no one can say otherwise. Please do not text in anything bad about Firefly, or you'll be banned forever.
I haven't seen it. Is that awful? That's worse.
I think you are going to be banned forever as well. So this is someone who also did a lot of Marvel work himself. He did X-Men comics that were just hugely loved and influential. So when Marvel had the chance to put together something like The Avengers, Joss Whedon was at the top of their list, and he was just the perfect person to put this together. He knew how to balance all these different elements and put the story into something people are going to enjoy.
Because remember, you can't get anything wrong. You've got all of these superheroes. They've all got incredibly complicated backstories. You need to have everything mesh perfectly.
Yeah, and if there's anything you want to look at for Joss Whedon in this film, if I have an image of him in my head,
mm-hmm.
it's the image of Atlas, you know, holding the world on his shoulders.
Mm-hmm.
He's just has so much more to balance. After that first movie, of course, yeah, he has, you know, these other four movies that had come out before it, you know, Incredible Hulk, Iron Man, Thor, Captain America. And so he was still balancing things, but just the weight now is just, I can't even imagine how it must feel for him making this film. Because now there's been 10 films before this, and he has to keep all those stories going and all those moving parts fitting in all the characters he wants to put into this, all the new villains he wants to put into this, introducing new things, balancing things, giving everyone the screen time they deserve, and not only that, but setting up for all the films that they have that are set for the next 5 years after this film.
Mm-hmm. This guy can't get a break, though. I mean, The Avengers has been in the news recently, and not for the right reasons when you think about it, thanks to the fact that a little girl tweeted a picture of her at a toy store, and she couldn't find a figurine for the Black Widow. She found all the other characters from The Avengers Age of Ultron. Then Mark Ruffalo, who's one of the main actors in The Avengers, found out about the story and tweeted Marvel saying, look, I want to buy figurines for my daughters, and I can't find any.
I think, though, we need to put that into perspective. If we look at the other characters that are in this film, these are huge properties and always have been as far as merchandise is concerned.
Mm-hmm.
Who is Black Widow? Did anyone even know who Black Widow was before Joss Whedon started bringing her into this universe? And now there's little girls out there trying to find Black Widow toys. And I think
mm-hmm.
that's a testament to Joss Whedon and the guy that created Buffy and who knows how to create these strong female characters that
mm-hmm.
young girls are going to respond to and want to go buy those toys in the first place.
Mm-hmm.
So if anything, that's a success. And that's Marvel's screw up are not having enough toys in stores, but that's also Joss Whedon's success and Marvel's success for wanting that demand to be there.
And he also has a fantastic actress in Scarlett Johansson who knows how to play a very strong female character.
Yeah, ScarJo is actually killing this. And I didn't see that coming 5 years ago when she just wasn't as good of an actress back then.
Mm.
She's become something better, and she does a great job here as well.
Okay, so The Avengers Age of Ultron is out. We've had a text in from Kumar. Thank you very much for this. And he says, hi guys, my 14-year-old daughter is coming from Chennai tomorrow. She wants to watch The Avengers Age of Ultron in 4D. Now, I checked the net. I could not find. Can you guys suggest, please? She's a great fan of Robert Downey Jr.
Yeah, it is in Vox Cinemas and their 4DX screens in Yas Mall and Derry City Center and Meredith City Center. So any one of those locations, you can go see it in 4D, and I'm sure there will be squirting things in your face and moving around in your chair, and you'll have a grand old time.
And there'll be bubbles.
And
I'm sure there'll be bubbles.
Probably be bubbles.
I don't know how you can fit bubbles into this story, but they will be there. Also, Stan, thank you very much for your SMS. He's saying, hello all. I watched Avengers: The Age of Ultron. It was an absolutely brilliant movie. And the Firefly series is one of the underappreciated series, but it was definitely one of the best. And that's from Stan.
A high five over the airwaves right there.
so you've got some fans there, William. So thumbs up, thumbs down for the Avengers Age of Ultron.
We haven't even talked about the movie yet. We have a whole other thing to get into right here. Mm-hmm. So let's talk about this film itself and not only what they did to get it to happen, but how did it actually turn out? And it is kind of, you can feel that weight on his shoulders while you're watching it. You can see all of those moving pieces, and you can see how hard it was for him to create something that was even coherent on the screen. The original cut of this film was 3.5 hours long. That's what he turned into Marvel. And you can kind of see that here, and you can see how did they even cut it down to 2 hours and 20 minutes with all of the pieces that are into this film. But on the other hand, I do have complicated feelings about what's here, but there's so much that I like here.
Mm-hmm. Those complicated feelings we will address in a few minutes here on Dubai i103.8. This is The Big Picture, where we look at all the latest film releases here in the United Arab Emirates. Currently, what we're looking at right now is the review of The Avengers: Age of Ultron. This is Dubai i103.8. This is The Big Picture on Dubai i103.8 with me, Zara Sor. Jason Lumber is away. He'll be back on Sunday. But I'm joined in the studio by our film critic, William Mullally. And we're just about to get into your full review of The Avengers: Age of Ultron, which is a new film. It's just come out and you've got a premiere review for us. A complicated film, and you've got mixed emotions about this film, William.
It is complicated. And you can think that I think this will be the turning point. 11 movies into this Marvel, you know, monster that they've created that's just going to continue at least for the next 5 years.
Mm-hmm.
This is where people, I think, are going to start jumping off board, because there's so much that you need to hold in your mind just to get into this film. This isn't a film that you can jump into like Avengers was, where you can just kind of pick it up and enjoy it as you're going.
Sure.
This is a film that assumes you have seen every other one of these films, or at least the last 5 or 6 of the most important ones. And it takes all that information for granted. And so a lot of people are going to sit down for this and be like, okay, what was happening? Wait, what are the details here?
Oh no, it's going to be one of those films where people are kind of nudging people with their elbows going, I don't understand.
Who are these characters? What is happening? So that's going to be a problem, I think, for viewers. Another thing that might be a problem for viewers is that the first film was, again, it was accessible, but it was mixed as well. It just had this amazing finale that brought people and left people in such a dizzying feeling of greatness in the way that Star Wars did, that people left so happy. This is a lot more all over the place, and it's inconsistent from scene to scene.
Okay.
So I could hear people start to whisper to their friends. I could hear people kind of fidgeting in their seats at certain points. Although it does find itself by the end, this is a film that is all over the place, tonally and action-wise and character-wise.
But why? Is it because they're trying to give too much screen time to everybody? Because when you think about it, you've got Captain America, you've got Thor, you've got Loki, Iron Man, Hulk, Thanos, the Black Widow. You've got so many big characters in this film.
Yeah, there's 4 origin stories in this film.
Mm-hmm.
And just this film alone, there's 4 origin stories of new characters that are being brought in. And I think me as a comic book fan, and growing up as one of those kids who were reading all these comics, that was fine for me because I'm so used to, I know kind of the basic backstories. I'm used to holding all these ridiculous stories in my head at once and waiting for it to culminate in some sort of big series like this. But not everyone else is going to do that. But I think Marvel has done a good job of training people's brains to accept this way. So I think there are enough people out there that will embrace this sort of storytelling and crave this sort of storytelling that it will have people. But I think casual fans are going to start jumping off board as this Marvel series goes on.
Mm-hmm. So The Avengers: The Age of Ultron is out right now. You can go see it this weekend. We predict it's going to be. But will it knock Fast and Furious 7 off the top spot in the top 5 for next week? I don't know.
Had it come out last week, I think it probably wouldn't have, but at this point, I think, in Fast and the Furious, it can kind of start going off into the sunset while people move on to other summer films that will capture people's hearts and minds and wallets.
Mm-hmm. So, but you do recommend for our listeners to go see it, and because it is, at the end of the day, a very entertaining story.
Yeah, honestly, at this point, I don't really need to recommend this film, because anyone that's seen the other 10 films aren't going to be like, well, this guy doesn't like it, I'm not going to go see this one. But I would kind of gear your mind towards keeping in mind that all these moving parts are here. Don't say, oh, why this movie isn't accessible on its own story. I mean, at this point, that part doesn't matter. Just enjoy it for what it is. Keep in mind you're going to have to keep all these moving parts in your head. Look for the goodness here, because there is a lot of goodness here hiding in little lines and little moments and little character scenes. Embrace the mess. Otherwise, you're not going to be able to accept it. So if you just submit to the film rather than resist it and accept the badness to get to the goodness, I think there's a lot of good to be had here.
I was desperately, while you were talking, I was listening to you, William, but I was also desperately trying to find this beautiful little clip that we have, and we played it, I think, this time last year, when the Lego movie came out, and it's Will Arnett, and he's playing Batman, and it's the little trailer where he's on his phone, and he's like, I'm texting on my bat phone, and they're like, no, just say the line, just say the line. He's like, I'm Batman, but I can't find it. So we're going to have to just seamlessly go into our classic film of the week review. It is the 1989 American superhero film, so we're staying with superheroes, Batman, and directed by none other than Tim Burton.
Yeah, the 1989 Batman is a really interesting movie to revisit now in the current landscape, because you see not only, I guess, how much things have changed, but how well this actually holds up in comparison to how things are now. It's such a different film than what we're expecting, and it's interesting to go back and watch a lot of the ideas that people are exploring, looking towards the next Batman that's coming out next year, Batman and Superman with Ben Affleck, or Batfleck, as people have affectionately started calling him.
What have they called it?
Batfleck.
Oh.
The Ben Affleck Batman. So that'll be coming out. We're seeing a lot of press for that. People are talking a lot about the Joker and the new Suicide Squad movie.
Yeah.
So it's a really interesting time to look back at these characterizations. And to a lot of people, the original characterizations for a couple generations now, looking at Jack Nicholson as the Joker and Michael Keaton as Batman. At the time, this movie kind of came out of nowhere, and it wasn't a film that I guess people or studios thought was going to be this zeitgeist moment that it was, because Batman had a very complicated history before this. If we look back, in most people's minds, Batman was this character that was kind of a joke. He was the Adam West Batman that was campy and silly. And this was all of a sudden influenced very much by comics by Alan Moore and Frank Miller, which are still influencing the movies today. And these are actually the same comics that were touchstones for the next Batman film that's going to come out next year, and the Suicide Squad that's going to come out next year as well. They look at these things, and they changed the tone, they made it a bit darker, they made it a bit more character-focused, and they did really interesting things with this film. First and foremost, I think what you notice about rewatching Batman is that it's not an action movie. When you're watching films like The Avengers, you feel like they have to have these gigantic action scenes and these, you know, epic, the world is about to end moments, which have become the touchstone of all these comic book films, but that's not to be had here. In a lot of ways, this is more of like a weird dark comedy. And a psychological comedy at that. Looking at these different characters, and the two sides of the same coin, I guess, in some ways. Jack Nicholson's Joker, this insane man who has fallen into a vat that Batman actually dropped him into, and Bruce Wayne in Michael Keaton, who's turned into Batman. And it's just, it plays off these weird laughs. We have to keep in mind where this film came out in Tim Burton's career. Tim Burton had just made Pee-wee's Big Adventure. He just made Beetlejuice, and he brought in Beetlejuice as well to create this different thing.
I forgot that he made Pee-wee's Big Adventure. Which was a very surreal film.
And a very great film as well. I really, really enjoy that film, and everyone enjoys Beetlejuice. And you can actually see, watching those two films, how Batman happened in his mind. And I think those films actually help you understand how he's thinking of Batman here. Because Batman here is kind of a messed up dude. He is a strange, crazy person who has decided to put on a costume, and we've kind of accepted that at this point, and it doesn't really delve into exactly the why and wherefore of how he became this person. It's just, we're dropped into this moment. We're dropped into the middle of the Batman story, which I think is absolutely great, and avoiding the origin story here, I think, was a masterstroke by Tim Burton in this film. Because
but why? Do you not like origin lines or kind of those kind of roots?
The writer of this film, Sam Hamm, he said when they were talking about it that getting into the story of why Batman became Batman almost ruins the believability of Batman in the first place.
Ah, okay.
You need that mystery.
Mm-hmm.
And to look at this guy, this crazy guy who's all of a sudden dressed up in a Batsuit, and try to figure mm-hmm. out him as you go. Because you look at all the other characters in a Batman story, and they're sitting there trying to figure that out too. If we're not as the audience doing that, it's a much more boring story,
mm-hmm.
I think. And I think films like Batman Begins, I remember rewatching this film when Batman Begins came out, and I really loved Batman Begins at the time, and I looked back and I said, oh, this movie doesn't do any of those things. This is a bad movie. Look at it. It's so silly. Look at it. It's so stupid. And now, 10 years later after that, I don't like Batman Begins at all. I think it's a terrible movie. I think it does a really boring, right-brained kind of job of trying to explain Batman, and actually fails, and I think those are terrible Batman movies and don't represent the character at all. Whereas you go back and watch this, and it just captures something very, very interesting. Mm-hmm. And it's something that those comics captured as well. Comics like The Killing Joke by Alan Moore.
But isn't it interesting that we take ourselves back to 1989, which is when Batman came out, and back then, like you said, people didn't really take Batman that seriously. You had that Adam West kind of character where it was just very, very funny. It was humorous. But nowadays, in 2015, you look at Batman and we instantly know it's going to be an incredibly dark movie. Do you miss that humor?
Yeah, and I think it's something, it's a kind of a pendulum back and forth that people getting, they have think it has to be, you know, the most serious Zack Snyder, Christopher Nolan, you know, terrible, this is the most serious movie you've ever seen, Batman, I'm Batman.
He never smiles.
Or it has to be the Joel Schumacher, you know, campy, silly, bat nipples version. Whereas this is a perfect, I guess, mix of the two. This is a very funny movie. There's small little scenes and they utilize Jack Nicholson and Michael Keaton very, very well to have that skill where they can kind of play this crazy, sad, funny in both of these characters of the Joker and Batman, and I guess their alter egos as well. So when we're looking at this, it has that great balance. It has that humor. It doesn't take itself too seriously.
Okay.
And it also has a very serious thing to say about these characters because they are deeply disturbed people. And if you look at Batman here, he's not that great of a guy. He's dropping the Joker into that vat of acid. And you can see in his eyes that he kind of wanted it to happen. You can see he's following people and he's watching people, like almost like he's Norman Bates. And you can see almost a very big influence by Alfred Hitchcock in this film.
Mm-hmm.
You can see Vertigo, you can see Psycho in both Batman and the Joker, which is very interesting. You don't think of Norman Bates when you think of Batman, but in Tim Burton's version, you do.
Mm-hmm. I've got to ask, though, so you've got Batman, and obviously this was a big hit for Tim Burton. Do you think he would ever go back and direct another superhero movie?
Honestly, I think...
Love him as a director. Interesting.
People asked him about this afterwards, and he goes back to this film. He thinks it's boring when he rewatches it, so I don't think that he could make another film like this.
Mm-hmm.
And I think he sells it short when he says that, because I think it's a much more interesting film than he does. I think that he's a much worse filmmaker today, so I wouldn't want them to go back and make something like this, because I don't think I think he's lost his spirit as a filmmaker, and he's lost what makes things interesting in a lot of ways. His films are really boring now, and you don't really think about them after you see them. You're like, oh, look, it's Tim Burton. Look, it's got that great. Oh, look, it's got his art design. I just love that characterization, the Danny Elfman music. It's just so great. And then you immediately forget it, even though it made a ton of money, or we can forget it completely, depending on which Tim Burton movie we're talking about here. But when you go back and watch these films, these, you know, Terry Gilliam-influenced films, these Alfred Hitchcock-influenced films that he made in the late 80s and early 90s, there's so much magic here, and there's more than you remember there being. So I really would make a case, go back and rewatch this, and go back, rewatch The Dark Knight Return, or sorry, Batman Returns in the second film in 1992. Go back and watch these films, because they're more interesting than you remember them being.
Fantastic impression of Tim Burton, by the way. I'm sure he sounds just like that.
That was actually a fan watching Tim Burton. So that is a Tim Burton fan. That's my stock guy. It's one of my many characters. You can see me at the Laugh Shack tonight.
Try the view.
Totally.
I'm here all week. Thank you very much for joining us on a Thursday afternoon here on Dubai Eye 103.8. My name is Zara Soar. Jason Lumber away, but he's back on Sunday. And I'm joined in the studio by William Mullally, who's our resident film critic. Now, just a quick recap of what we've been talking about today on the show. Top five for this week: at number one, Fast and Furious 7. Number two, Paul Blart, Mall Cop 2. At number three, Tracers. Number four, Barely Legal. And at number five, Dum Laga Kihashi. So that's our top five for this week. We've been looking at the new releases as well. Samba's coming out. That was at the Dubai International Film Festival in 2014. It's now got a general release. And our premiere of this week, we were talking about this only a few minutes ago, The Avengers: Age of Ultron. And it's a complicated film, William. Mixed emotions about this, but you do recommend it to our listeners.
Yeah, this isn't a film that I can recommend as wholeheartedly, I guess, as the first Avengers film, which is a much more accessible and, in the end, much more enjoyable film. But there's still a lot to enjoy here. But I think a lot of things, you're going to be maybe turned off by some of the bigger moments here and enjoying a lot of the smaller moments. Because I think that's what Joss Whedon, as a filmmaker, is more interested in. So the characters, I think, succeed here. A lot of little things succeed. And so I think there is joy to be had in this film, as long as you accept it for what it is.
As long as you accept it for what it is. But it's incredibly entertaining. Go watch it, and we'd love to get your reviews. 4001 is our SMS number, or you can text us via the Dubai Eye 103.8 Messenger app. Of course, that's available on Android and iPhone stores. It's not just free, it's also faster. And I love this because you can send us photos, as one listener did last week, William, and they sent us, what was it? A hen's party, because all the ladies were wearing, was it Chris Hemsworth masks?
Chris Hemsworth, yeah.
Actually, was it Liam?
No, it was a little bit of Liam, but mostly Chris.
Yeah, mostly Chris.
Yeah. I think my favorite review I've actually seen so far of Avengers Online, there's one woman, I think, that writing out of Las Vegas, and she's just like, why would Black Widow choose Hulk? Why wouldn't she choose Thor? This movie's stupid.
There's just no logic behind it. But just quickly, it's time for this now. Game of Thrones. And everybody's been watching this. Everyone's been glued to their TV screens, William. But why? Why?
Yeah, so far it is a much different series, I think, than the other four seasons that we saw before this one. Mm-hmm. The story seems to start be evolving. As we've said before on this program, George R. R. Martin is going to be less and less a part of this show, both his work and himself as a producer. The characters here, I think, are trying to move a bit more organically, and the creators of the show are moving a bit more organically. Mm-hmm. And as a result, things are getting more interesting. Characters that seem to be on opposite sides of the globes are combining. We saw some characters here that we hadn't seen in a while, meeting characters that we've been following as well. We see Jon Snow, who's coming into his own as a leader, which has been absolutely fascinating. And hopefully Khaleesi will be getting a bit more interesting as well, because she hasn't been having the best time. I guess the last season and a half have been mostly sitting in a room doing nothing. And becoming, I guess, a lot more less likable in the process. But Game of Thrones isn't a show that's really concerned with people being likable. Mm-hmm. And another thing that this show does so well is characters that seem like the worst villains become, like Jaime Lannister, for example, starts off in the show as contemptible as possible.
Mm-hmm.
You know, having a strange relationship with his sister, pushing little boys out of buildings, then becoming, rapscallion heroes by the second series. Moving back to villains, then moving back to heroes. And so this season as well, we've seen characters like his sister becoming, I guess, a terrible villain and then kind of becoming a bit more understandable and seeing her, I guess, a bit more a subject of her circumstances. Mm-hmm. And so this show will never let you hate somebody completely or love somebody completely, but you will always be absolutely enraptured with what's going on.
Mm-hmm.
And I think a big problem that people are going to have going forward, this so far we haven't really seen big moments happening here. We've seen the story moving on a bit at a faster pace than it is normally. One of the things people criticize about Game of Thrones is the fact that a character can move for 500 pages and have only just taken a walk. Things do seem to be moving quickly. Characters do seem to be evolving and changing so far. And from what I've heard, in the next few episodes, it's going to get a lot more problematic and people are going to be having a lot bigger moments. And so I think that whole spoiler thing that we got so concerned about in other seasons is going to come back to being a problem. So I think I would recommend on Mondays for the next 6 weeks, stay away from your computers, stay away from your friends, just lock yourself in a small room until you've been able to watch the episodes, because big things are going to happen.
Great advice for the weekend, William Mullally.
Never leave your house. Don't talk to anyone. Keep your radio on. Keep it on 103.8.
On that happy note, no, I'm just kidding. Big thank you to William Mullally for joining us this week. We will see you next Thursday.
Yeah, my pleasure. We'll be talking about Reese Witherspoon and Sofia Vergara.
Fantastic.